Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Welcome to Local Food Connections, a show about the power of locally grown food to connect us more strongly with our communities and the lands we inhabit. Local Food Connections is brought to you by Local Food Connect. We're broadcasting from Wurundjeri country and pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. We respect the enduring strength of First Nations people and acknowledge their long heritage of agriculture and care for the land in which our food is now grown. Today, it's my pleasure to welcome Robin Gail Baker into the studio again. Robin is a frequent contributor to our show. Welcome, Robin.
Thank you, Anne.
And Robin's here today to talk all about Queensland fruit fly.
I am.
So very specific topic because Queensland fruit fly used to just live in Queensland and now they're down here.
Unfortunately.
And just before we start, my first question because I'm just curious. Why did we stop? It seems that we've stopped that thing at the border where you have to chuck your fruit in the bins. Have they just given up? Did they give up because they lost the fight or did that cause the fruit fly to get through?
Well, I can't really answer that, Anne. I don't know why they stopped, but It's interesting that you raise that because I read on a blog the other day somebody saying it's not climate change that has caused Queensland fruit fly to move south. It's lax border controls for food. Mm. But actually, I don't believe that because that would suggest that the only place that Queensland fruit fly crosses is at those border points. And, of course, we have the Murray and we have agriculture on both sides of the Murray right along the border. So, and clearly, Queensland fruit fly has moved across the river.
And it doesn't fly, does it? Does it come in by through the larvae and the fruit, or does it actually fly across?
It does fly short distances. Mm-hmm. It flies short distances, and then it will infect the fruit that it comes across. It doesn't move very fast. So, for example, it appears to have come into the top of the Yarra Valley in some very mild winters of 2011 and 12, but it took, I would say, 5 or 6 years to move down through the Yarra Valley and out into the northern suburbs of Melbourne. So you have two ways that it travels. One is on its wings, so to speak, and because it doesn't fly very far, it's a slow movement. Mm-hmm. However, I recently discovered that from some members of Sustainable McLeod who live in Glen Waverley that they've got it. Mm. But that may be because someone transported some fruit from the Yarra Valley or from further north in Victoria or the northern suburbs over to Glen Waverley and suddenly it takes off because they're not familiar with it. They don't know what to do with the rotten fruit. Maybe they throw it in their compost, which is the very worst thing you could possibly do. Right. So that's the story.
Mm. And are you aware, do you know, has it affected the commercial fruit growing operations up in the border?
Yes, it has. Mm. In South Australia, the South Australian government introduced sterile males, And I think that happened somewhere in northern Victoria as well, in an attempt to wipe it out. But it's had an enormous effect on commercial farms.
Mm-hmm. But we're here primarily to talk to people that are actually growing some fruit and can actually have an effect on the, yeah. the spread of the fruit fly. So you said it came about 6 years ago to the Yarra Valley?
2011 and 12, so we're really looking, what, 13
yeah.
years ago.
Because time marches on very quickly.
Yes, it does. And, you know, we can't quite pinpoint when it emerged, but, of course, those suburbs that are closest to the south end of the Yarra Valley, so Eltham, Kangaroo Ground, Diamond Creek, Wattle Glen would have been the first. I think for McLeod, where I'm from, our first evidence of it came when members in Watsonia, which is the next suburb to us, started to report that they had Queensland fruit fly.
Mm. And as far as you know, where is you've said Glen Waverley, what's the extent of it, do you think, in, say, the Melbourne region?
Well, it's really interesting because I have friends and family in Preston, and it doesn't appear to be in Preston. I might be wrong about that, but it doesn't appear to be. It's now reached Ivanhoe, and I would say just in the last 2 years. So, I would imagine that it would be spreading within the next 2 years across the river again and into Kew. It's also in central Victoria, areas like Harcourt, Castlemaine, Bendigo. So it's basically all over the place.
Yep.
And I think from now on people have to assume that it's going to be in their suburb or their country town.
And their fruit.
Yeah, and their fruit.
All right. So
and vegetables.
Oh, and vegetables too.
Yeah. Well, it particularly affects tomatoes, capsicums, chilies and eggplant.
Yep.
Not your cucumbers and zucchinis.
So the fruits that we call vegetables.
Yeah, the fruits that we call vegetables, yeah.
Yeah. So what does the little critter look like?
Okay, so I always say it looks much smaller than a housefly. Now, it's only slightly shorter in length, so it's about 7 mil in length, and a housefly is usually 8 or 9 mil. It has a reddish brown body, and on the thorax, which is the middle section of an insect, it has two yellow stripes down the sides and a triangle of yellow at the base of the thorax, and there's nothing on the abdomen, which is the last part, and then it has clear wings. But if you compare it to a housefly, which has a sort of a fattish oval body, it has a very narrow body, and so it's really very hard to see. So people will say to me sometimes, oh, I haven't seen any around. Well, you're not going to see any around. It's just too small.
Right. So you'd have to sort of, if you saw something you thought that was it, you'd have to get it, take it somewhere and get it under a magnifying glass or something?
Well, yes, you would really, because if you think about it, there's over 4,000 fruit flies in the world. About 350 of them will attack vegetables and fruit, but without doing a DNA test, basically, you can never be 100% sure what you've caught in your lure.
Just cycling back a bit to the climate change angle, just out of interest, does it seem to thrive better in warmer climates?
Oh, absolutely. It's a warm.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, so it's now in Queensland, New South Wales, Victoria and South Australia.
So it wouldn't have affected apple orchards in the Northern Hemisphere back, you know, when they were evolving?
Well, it's native to Australia.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. It's why it's called Queensland fruit fly.
Okay.
So we have two fruit flies that are damaging in Australia, Queensland fruit fly and in Western Australia, Mediterranean fruit fly. I'm not aware of it having got into any other countries.
Okay. So that's what it looks like. What does it look like inside the fruit? How do you know?
They're full of maggots. Uh-huh. These little creamy maggots. They're about 2 mil long, and you will not be in any doubt. But if you are in any doubt, if you say cut open an apricot and it's full of maggots, and they get out onto the bench, they will actually jump. They go onto their tail and they jump, and that is individual entirely right. to Queensland okay. fruit fly.
Mm. Yes. So that's the best test.
Yeah, they look like a cartoon maggot, you know, jumping along. Boom,
so
boom,
leaping
boom,
maggots, that's delightful. Yeah. It's a lovely image.
Yes, okay. And you rarely get one.
Right.
It's a bunch.
And so if you've got, an apricot tree, you're likely to have them in every apricot?
Yeah, you are. Oh. Yeah.
Is that something you've had to see yourself in your own fruit?
Paul and I haven't had any fruit fly. Well, we've had fruit fly, but we haven't had any infection of fruit fly at our home for 4 years now. And it's the same with the Sustainable McLeod Community Garden. And that's because we've learnt a strategy that works.
Ah, okay. Mm. Well, that's... I wonder we should just... let's just talk about that strategy. Okay. I think everyone will be dying to know.
Yes. Okay. So... let's say 6 years ago, we had some fruit fly at the community garden in the stone fruits and some at home, mostly in our guavas and feijoas. So we started to put out lures, and lures are terrific, but they will only get rid of about 10% of whatever you've got. So lures you primarily use to attract the males in the beginning. So you use wild male lures, or there's a dry lure that you can use. And they contain a pheromone, and the pheromone smells exactly like the female. So it attracts them. And that tells you that they're about. So they're really a monitoring thing. But I also think they're really good for mopping up overwintering males. So the females don't overwinter, but the males do. And you won't have a lot of males, but the more of them that you get rid of, and they're looking for the females mm-hmm, to mate, obviously. Mm-hmm. Now, we use dry lures as well as wet lures. Wet lures contain wild may.
Contain what?
Wild may. It's a plant-based pheromone.
Oh.
It's from the Myrtaceae family, Leptospermum. Uh-huh. Can't remember the full name of it. And the same kind of pheromone is in the dry lure, so it's like a wick that sits underneath the lid. And I really like the dry lures because you can actually see the males in it.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a point last year when I checked the lure and I found about 70 males, and yet I had no infection at all.
Wow.
In my garden. So, you know,
yep.
It's really good to try and get rid of as many of the of the males that are around, because less males, less mating.
Where do you get those lures from?
Okay, so Sustainable McLeod sells the wild may, also the insect exclusion netting and Ceratrap, which I'll come to. Mm-hmm. Most nurseries sell the insect exclusion netting and they'll sell various things, but wild may is incredibly hard to get. I don't understand why, but it's not generally, it's not stocked by Bunnings or most of the local nurseries. Mm. I haven't found it in a local nursery, actually.
So M-A-Y?
M-A-Y.
Yep.
Yep.
Wild may.
W-I-L-D.
Yep.
M-A-Y. Yeah, so we have... you just go to the Sustainable McLeod shop. That's sustainablemcleod.org.au. Under our projects, you'll find shop, and you can order that online, but you do have to collect it from the community garden.
Mm-hmm. Just to interrupt again, what's in the commercial? What's in the ones that you would just buy at Bunnings then?
it must be the same kind of pheromone.
Right.
So you can buy dry lures there, and you can buy replacement wicks. The lure bottles themselves, you can buy at some nurseries, and you can buy at Bunnings. Sustainable McLeod doesn't sell the lure bottles. Lure bottles, by the way, must have a yellow top on them because that's attractive. So if people are making homemade traps or baits or lures, they'd use a PET bottle. And where the PET bottle narrows, you would want to paint that yellow. So inset exclusion netting, that's a 2x2 mil weave, and it's 6 metres wide. And I always recommend, if people are covering fruit trees with net, that they get a 6 metre by 6 metre, because when you drape it over, then all edges will go to the ground. But if you get, say, a 5x6, which we did in the beginning because we thought that would work, it just, the 5 metre side doesn't go to the ground.
Yep.
And it's really important that you weigh the bottom of the net down. We throw mulch on it generally, but people use bricks or whatever they've got, sometimes soil. You need to weigh it down, because these little critters can crawl right under the net.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a lot of initiative,
highly motivated.
Highly motivated, a lot of initiative.
Yeah.
So net is our primary means of protecting our fruit and vegetables. So if it can't get through the net, you don't have any problem. There are a couple of riders on that. So when you plant tomatoes, they're self-fertile. They fertilise by vibration. So you can net straight away. But with capsicums and chilies and eggplant, you need to wait until pollination has taken place. You could hand pollinate. I haven't found that very successful. And the way you know that pollination has taken place is that the flowers die off, and sometimes you'll see a little tiny fruit behind where the flower was.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as those ones are pollinated, you net them. And with fruit, you need, again, to wait until pollination has happened. So we keep our fruit trees very low. That's for safety reasons as well as reasons to net. And we find that very successful. We don't net at home. We don't net our citrus, but we spray that with a substance called kaolin clay.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fine white clay. And you need to spray it so all the fruit is covered, all sides of the fruit. And it has a gritty surface, and it's that gritty surface that the Queensland fruit fly really dislike. So they won't stay on it long enough to inject their eggs into the fruit. But at the community garden, we actually net all the citrus individually, whereas our stoned fruit and apples and pears and quince, that is all under a frame that was already existing, and we've just attached net to the side. So, you know, we have a walk-in netted orchard.
Best thing.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
The revolution in Rojava is a beacon of hope for the world, putting direct democracy and feminism into practice on a broad scale. This radical attempt at social transformation now faces huge challenges, including daily attacks by the Turkish military with little outside recognition or aid. Show your support for Rojava by joining North East Syria Solidarity, or NESS, and help ensure the survival of this inspiring experiment in social change. NESS sends aid, raises awareness, and builds solidarity. Get involved at www.nesssolidarity.org.au. NESS is a 3CR supporter.
Connections show on 3CR Community Radio, 855 kilohertz on your AM radio dial, and 3CR on digital radio. You can also find the 3CR website and listen to the live streaming of the show. Today we are joined by the very knowledgeable, it turns out, Robin Gale Baker about Queensland fruit fly. There was so much information there. So my first question is, can you get all that on your website, all that information?
You certainly can. I haven't got to Serratrap yet. So as I said, with Wild May and the dry lures, they're essentially for monitoring, making sure that you know when Queensland fruit fly is in your garden. But our primary strategy is to use net, insect exclusion net. But there's one other thing, and that's called Serratrap. And Serratrap is a protein that is attractive to both males and females. And the females need a feed of protein before they mate. Mm-hmm. So, again, this will probably only mop up about 10% of the population, but it's a really important thing. And unlike Wild May, which needs to be topped up weekly, Serratrap lasts for 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
So just one other thing that I want to say here, and this is a really opportune time to be on the program, is that Queensland fruit fly mate at sunset when the temperature reaches 16 degrees or above. Now, sunset at the moment is about 6 p.m. and on average you get 2 days a month in August where the temperature reaches 16 degrees at sunset, and that hasn't happened yet in August, and it's probably not going to happen this week because it's so damn cold. But certainly the last week of August, first week of September, you can expect that Queensland fruit fly will be mating at sunset.
Wow, there's so much knowledge there. That's great. So knowledge is power.
It is power.
And it seems like you've got to attack this on all different fronts, right? And all of this is on your website.
It's all on the website.
So say the website name so everyone knows.
SustainableMcLeod.org.au. Mm-hmm. On the website we have about 500 articles, all locally written, about edible food and waste and clean energy and biodiversity. But if you go down the right-hand side of the blog, you'll see that Queensland fruit fly is indexed.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And how long did it take you to get to this point of eradication?
Well, it took us 2 years, really.
Oh.
First year was pretty disastrous. The second year, the only thing at the community garden that was affected was some capsicums, which had not... We had two lots of capsicums. One hadn't been netted at all. And the second one, the net had been draped over, but, you know, sort of the bottom was kind of scalloped and they just went straight underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
We learnt from that. And now we drop our nets, as we say, as soon as pollination has taken place. We net tomatoes as we plant them and everything else as it's pollinated.
Mm-hmm. So the key thing here is that insect-proof netting is the foundation of the whole thing.
Absolutely, it's a foundation. Mm. Other, you know, people and organisations might have a different way of going about it, but what we've done is just worked on what works,
yep.
And that's what works for us.
Yeah, That's a great service you've done to everyone else in doing that kind of rigorous action research in a way.
And I should say too that we sell All Queensland Fruit Fly supplies at cost as a community service.
Yes. Yep. That's a good point. So you're not here spruiking something you're making a profit from.
Definitely not.
Okay. Any other comments about the fruit fly before I ask you some maybe something else?
I think I've probably covered everything that we need to say about fruit fly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm. So go to Sustainable McLeod. Sounds like a really good first step to getting your own garden cleansed of this.
Yeah. At the community garden, we don't have individual plots. We garden as a community, so everything is communal. And it's a great place to learn about gardening, pruning, when to plant, when to fertilise, how to make compost.
Because you're all doing it together.
We're all doing it together.
So there's one big trial going on rather than people all having to do their
trial and error. Yeah.
Which is a real barrier to gardening, I feel.
Yeah.
For people that are a little bit more haphazard, like myself. So it's quite common just for me to give up on a particular crop because I can't, I haven't figured it out. The penny hasn't dropped about what's going on, and I don't put in the effort to play around with it.
Actually, I should go back to Queensland Fruit Fly because there is something that I haven't said, and that is how to dispose of infected fruit.
Yes, you mentioned this.
Yeah, so never put it in the compost. It's great if you've got chooks and you can run them under your fruit trees or in your garden. But if you do have infected fruit, the best thing to do is to rake it up daily, if possible, and put it in black plastic bags, so double black plastic bags, and solarise it. And that means tie it up, put it in the warmest part, it might be against a metal shed or on brick paving for 7 to 14 days, and the sun will heat up and kill everything. Mm-hmm. Another way of doing it is to microwave.
Oh, okay.
But I can tell you it really smells.
Oh, really?
If you're microwaving fruit, if you've got an old microwave and you can put it outside, that would be ideal. And any infected fruit should never go in the green bin.
Because
the green bin goes off and gets composted.
Get taken all over the place.
Yeah, so it's an ideal environment for it to develop. You put it in the red bin, wrap it and put it in the red bin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So nothing can survive going through chooks?
No.
So the chook, chook poo's not going to be infected or anything?
And what happens is that it drops off the tree and the larvae bury into the ground. They come out of the fruit and into the ground and they pupate in the ground. But once you've got rid of it, the next season you're free of all of anything that's pupated in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So, And people should also know that it will affect Australian native fruits as well.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes people forget that.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Right, so that's a lot of fantastic information. Now, I'll just say that Robin is a frequent contributor to the Local Food Connect newsletter that Guy runs, Guy Palmer, and writes really great, concise articles about all sorts of topics.
Thank you.
What's the latest one you've done? Do you remember? Or what some of the ones that you've done that people could go and read about?
Okay, I've just done one on corn. Actually, I don't think that one's published yet. Last month I did one on growing asparagus, which is a perennial. It's great to grow your own asparagus.
Yeah.
Just on the subject of Local Food Connect, what we're doing at Sustainable McLeod at the moment is preparing all our tomatoes, which are quite famous, actually. They're well adapted to McLeod. We collect the seed in McLeod and we grow from McLeod conditions. So we have 16 heirloom varieties, which will be available at the Eltham Market, run by Local Food Connect, on the first Sunday of September, October and November. And there'll be two market stalls down in Macleod. And I should give a shout out too to another LFC event, which is the Bundoora Farm opening on October the 4th and 5th.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay, thank you so much for that. We have to go. That's really as local food, isn't it, when you know that your tomatoes are adapted to your microclimate of Macleod. That's
great.
Fantastic. My name's Anne Stanley. My guest was Robin Gale Baker. Until next week, love the land you're on, etc. Stay tuned to 3CR. Bye for now.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.